Blog Talk Radio.
Believe, which I wrote May 29th, 2015. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our labors for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people. Our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. Now, this program this evening is, which candidates of any political party can we support? And we have a beginning list and why we support this list. And one of the overriding elements involved in this election season is fear. What we are really talking about is fear. Fear in America. The so-called progressives, or many of us, speak of the lesser evil or evils. Fear of the major evil is the issue. The constant issue for years has been fear. And I'm thinking of the philosopher who said, people should not fear their government, but governments should fear their people. Until this government begins to fear its people, we will not be able to think about democracy or a just government. People manage to be happy and fearful at the wrong time. When Barack Obama became president, many people of color danced in the streets of Chicago. They should have been fearful, for many white folk were buying out the gun shops. Many white folks always had guns. Presently, more folks of color and progressive young brothers and sisters of all colors are buying and showing arms. This is not a time to be fearful. It is a time to be active. That is what we try to do and encourage others to do. And our main action is to free those who understood this and that, our political prisoners in the death camps. Without further ado, Sister Betty, the mic is yours.
Well, it is my privilege and my pleasure and my honor to introduce Sister Sarah Adams. We have a whole new spin on what is meant by the Adams family. She was not here. As you know, we try to have a poetess or poet for every one of our radio blogs to honor our Sister Len Stewart, who loved and wrote poetry. But last week, this young lady was out bringing down the system in Rochester, New York. They fired an entire police department. Prior to that, she organized high school students to give the governor a pink slip for firing their accountable teachers. So without further ado, and with great honor, and I think Brother Ralph wants to jump in on this praise for her actions, because you know, the fruit doesn't fall too far from the tree. Her parents never missed an opportunity to support Len Stewart. Her working class parents, I should say.
And understand, when we say the Adams family, we're not talking about a family that we should be fearful of. We're talking about a family that the government must be fearful of. And the people up in Rochester, if you're paying attention to the news, some of the people behind this movement is the Adams family. And without further ado, one of the younger of the Adams family, Sarah Adams,
her mic is open, but she wasn't here because she was, like I said, she was doing what we all got to do if we want to see a revolution and freedom. Sister Sarah Adams, it is a privilege to open your microphone.
Hey, so first of all, I just want to say sorry for missing last week. It was the first night that we went from marching every night to occupying our city hall and our mayor's office. So that night was kind of different, and we were getting settled in, and I, like, was so sidetracked by that, so sorry for missing. But today I'm going to read a poem that was actually written by one of my bosses at Teen Empowerment, my summer job that I had, but she was honestly more like a mentor to me. And she wrote this poem about just, like, the community and how we need to see change in the community. And I feel like it's another poem that's, like, really, she wrote it a long time ago, like, multiple years ago. But I feel like it's still relevant to today. So I'm going to read this poem by my boss at Teen Empowerment.
Go ahead.
How do we save this nation? By working together, so those who have are willing to give, so others won't have to relive history, past, and at last, those people will be given a name, philanthropist. But this is just terminology, because chronologically, it has been their tradition to give their rendition through donation. But how do we save this nation? How do we save this nation, this creation of people who have become immune to another's pain? So the struggle remains persistent because we refuse to listen to their silent cries, struggle undefeated, and we sit back as society repeats it. So how do we save this nation? When defeat and opportunity meet, when poverty and wealth greet, when philanthropy becomes more than just a word, but something like a proverb to better the community and keep hope alive. And hope lives within the hands of the haves and the have-nots. So with hands missing, then we have not accomplished what we stand for, which is to have more. But we have more and forget about our poor. So how do we save this nation? When we realize that service is not giving handouts, but extending a handout. And knowing that sometimes your work won't be acknowledged, but have the knowledge that this nation needs. And knowing that good deeds never go unnoticed. And you can quote this from an indigenous woman, Maori. Do not come to help me unless you see your liberation as tied up in mine. Then come work with me. And all that means is that you should feel free when reaching out to people like me. And that's the true definition of philanthropy. Together, we will save this nation.
All right. That's a philosophy that Charles Dickens had, that the nation would be saved by philanthropy. That's a thought. That's a position. We have another position, the position that you live in reality, the position of activism that your folks have taught you and support you in. Thank you so much for that, Sarah Adams, and we will continue. Sister Betty.
Sister Sarah, oh, do you mind telling us what grade you're in this year?
I just started my ninth grade year.
All right. And I assume you have a group of comrades, a cadre, that's still determined to continue the struggle in Rochester?
Yeah, we've been out here every day. Today we took a break, but we're going to be back out tomorrow.
Okay, sweetheart. Stay strong and take care. We love you so much. You are our only hope. You truly represent Jalil Monte King when he said, "We are our own liberators." And my heart breaks that those of us who went out in the 60s and fought so hard could not have handed you a better legacy. But we are so proud of you, and you are so dear to us. Without further ado, I want to go to some of my comrades that are struggling to keep Pacifica alive. And we're changing our format a little bit because, you know, we are about political prisoners, and Jericho usually gets on at this time, and they have a big report to make. But I'm going to ask your indulgence while we open the mics for Sister Serene. I think I see her, and I do believe I see someone else from Pacifica. I'm going to try and open their mics as well. If you'll just bear with me. I think I see John. I'm not sure. 516? Okay, so Sister Serene from Serene, your mic is open. She is with the Pacifica and, of course, WBAI.
Thank you so much, and thank you to Sister Sarah. That was just very, I mean, she's what, 14? Hello? So, yeah, you know, we definitely have a good future because we have such warrior sisters coming down the line. I'm very proud of her. I wanted to just update people really quickly about what's happening in WBI and happening at Pacifica, because last year you might recall that early October some folks showed up first thing in the morning, changed the locks, tell the staff it's been real, and started piping in programming from elsewhere in the country. All of our local programs were removed, and that situation lasted for a month. Quite inadequate in terms of programming, the number of issues that we needed to have been covering here in New York at that time. And after a month, we were able, through the courts, to get them out. They simultaneously, in fact, the very same morning that they showed up in, you know, gangbusters here in Brooklyn to try to take us down, they went to court to try to force a vote on a set of bylaws that would have removed staff from the board, would have brought in a celebrity, semi-celebrity set of people whom we did not, whom we never as a membership got a chance to communicate with, had no idea what their intentions were or what their knowledge was, frankly, of what Pacifica needed and what was happening at Pacifica and how they were being used and misused. We went through that process. We were forced to conduct a vote. The vote of the membership rejected the bylaw changes that these folks were trying to force through by 2-1. But the entire exercise cost us $150,000, which to some media operations may not be a lot of money, but for Pacifica was a lot of money that should have been used elsewhere. Well, they're back. You know, they were rejected in March by the membership, and here comes September, and they're back again. They've changed a few things. They've tweaked a few things, but it's still their whole proposal comes from the position that the membership, that the listeners, that the staff don't have anything to contribute to Pacifica except for our money and our free, mostly free labor. Those of us who want to preserve Pacifica are very concerned. We know these folks have sent out a mailer to the entire membership saying, it's a new day at Pacifica. And using that and threatening us that we're about to go under and you have to sign this petition, it's the only way to save the operation. You know, they're asking people to sign the petition. We're asking you to not sign the petition. Because if they get enough signatures, we will, as an organization, have no option but to put out another election, you know, barely 6 months later, put out another election for to vote on bylaws that are essentially the same as those we just rejected. We think that there's a serious possibility that some of these people are simply trying to bankrupt the organization, because once in bankruptcy court, you can sell the pieces off, and we won't have a progressive radio network. And we are not NPR. We are not public radio. We are community radio. We're listener-owned, listener-sponsored, volunteer staff, community-involved, purpose-driven, mission-based radio. So when the New Day Pacifica people come with their same old, can I say crap? It's important to not sign the petition. And if you have signed the petition, you know, because they put on a good act, you can unsign the petition. You can withdraw your signature. So people need to go to PacificaFightback.org. PacificaFightback.org. I'm a member of Justice and Unity, as is Ralph, and Sister Betty. And Justice and Unity is working with others in Pacifica under the name Pacifica Fight Back to protect WBAI and the other four stations and the 200 and something, you know, affiliate stations that carry some of our programming from this takeover operation that says all we have to give is money and then sit down, shut up, and let them do what they will. That's not how that's going to work. We don't do that anymore. All right, so please remember PacificaFightback.org, and on Saturday coming, the 26th at 7 p.m., there's going to be a Zoom town hall meeting, and those of you who don't like to show up on camera and don't like to do business with Zoom, you can just call in on a regular phone, you know, on your cell phone too, and participate by telephone and hear the experiences of others around Pacifica. We're in Houston. Houston is a red state, a very red state. Lots of backward action coming out of there. We're not giving up a Pacifica station in Houston. You know, we're in D.C. So much corruption in a certain part of town, downtown. We're in Los Angeles. We're in Berkeley. And we're in the heart of New York. We want to grow Pacifica and have it serve our communities. We're not backing down. We're not giving it up. So PacificaFightback.org for any details, and please join that Saturday call if you can.
Thank you so much for that, Serene. People, remember, Pacifica is extremely important in making an attempt to bring real news to the people. We want to bring news that maybe commercial radio is not ready for. And so we support Pacifica for what they do and what they are trying to do. And in supporting that, we have to reject those efforts to shut it down or change it into something else. Thanks again, Serene Roberts.
I have another microphone open. 516 of the first three numbers, 8228. I won't announce you, but I have a feeling you probably support what was just said. Would you like to add a few words? Your mic is open. 8228.
Yes, I would. Hello?
Please do. Please add those words.
Hi.
Your microphone is open. Please speak. Hello? I guess.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, but you must speak.
Okay. Yes, I support everything Serene said. They're trying to do the same thing they did last November. I can't believe it, but they're back. And I urge everyone listening, if you get those the mailers where they're asking you to sign, please do not sign. They're back to their old tricks again. I just, you know, it's incredible. I can't believe they're doing this again. But I think they are trying to bankrupt the station. I do. I think they're trying to sell WBAI. Don't let them, because it's too important. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. And I think everyone has got the idea. Don't let them sell Pacifica. Let us fight, because the fight is constant. Thanks again. Sister Betty.
Okay, without further ado, we're going to go back to our usual suspects. And so the next suspect is our wonderful organizer for New York City Jericho and the coordinator for In the Spirit of Nelson Mandela, which is an organization that is trying to free Jalil Mantikin, one of my personal favorite political prisoners, because he said, "We are our own liberators." Sister Ann Lamb of New York City Jericho, I think you got a lot to say. Go ahead.
Oh, you know me. I talk all day about political prisoners. Yes. Well, I could talk very nicely. I went on Sunday to the Freedom Fighters contingent of the African American Day Parade, since it was not an actual parade. We were the parade. And it was really very wonderful. We had quite a good little group of people. We had lots of banners and signs. We did march from the Frederick Douglass statue up to 135th Street, ended at the Schomburg. So we were certainly in some historic places. King Downing was there. He was not only our legal observer, he was also filming, and he was also stopping traffic. So he was wearing a lot of hats. But it was very good, very excellent, good response from, you know, people in the community. We stopped, of course, in front of the building where the Panther office used to be. Shep did a lot of education of everybody. And so it was really excellent, and I was really happy that we did that, out there representing for our freedom fighters, many of whom still sitting behind the walls of various horrible death camps, as Ralph would say, because that's what they are. So, you know, it's really good to be out there and to be in support of brothers and sisters behind the walls. And it was also nice because there was some kind of bike run going on. So while we were still by Frederick Douglass, there were all these bunch of young people coming by. There had been a couple of thousand of them on bikes. And they saw our signs and our banners, and they all put their fists up in the air, you know. So it was really nice to have that little solidarity even before we started. And then one of the sisters suggested, well, maybe we should get in the middle of them. And I said, they're moving a lot faster than we are.
Anne, tell me something. Anne, do you have anything else to report?
Yes. I don't know how many people were able to listen today to the RAP had put out a thing that they were doing a press conference this morning at 9 about these hearings that were finally going on up in Albany, virtual hearings around the whole issue of COVID-19 in prisons and jails throughout the state of New York. This was extremely interesting. It went on all day. I listened to most of it, even though I was at work. You know, I had my earplugs in. And it started out with, you know, they had a Nucci there, and, you know, they had this and that, you know, all reporting about how wonderful they'd been. And I would say to myself, well, this is not good. But then after about, I would say, 2.5 hours, we had all of our people testifying. You know, RAP was testifying, and the Parole Prep Project was testifying, and the Bronx defendants testified, and the Brooklyn defendants, and all these different groups that have been doing all this work up in Albany for so long of trying to get these two laws passed, the Safe and Timely Parole Bill and the Elder Parole Bill. And the Safe and Timely Parole Bill would prohibit the parole board from ever saying that they are keeping somebody inside due to the nature of the crime. And the other one would give everybody who is over the age of 55 and has been inside for more than 15 years a chance to go to the board regardless of what their sentence is. So both of these laws would
Sister
be extremely
Anne,
helpful.
Would you please repeat that again? That is so important. Please repeat that.
Okay. There's two bills that RAP and, you know, a whole group of people called Solitary and everybody, challenging incarceration, a whole bunch of different groups from all over the state have been working on this for a long time. So there are two bills that we're really trying to get passed. One is the Safe and Timely Parole Act, and the other one is the Elder Parole Act. Might not have the exact names, but I know it's the Safe and Timely Parole Act for sure. And the Safe and Timely Parole Act, if and when they ever decide to vote on it, would prohibit the parole board from using the stock phrase that they use when they deny people parole over and over again due to the nature of the crime. They would no longer be able to say that. They would definitely have to look at who is the person now, what, how are they now, what have they achieved inside, are they ready to come home. And the Elder Parole Bill would allow everybody in the state of New York prisons who are over the age of 55 and have a sentence, whether determinate or indeterminate, of more than 15 years would be eligible to go to the board. So this is, you know, excellent news if, you know, we can get it passed. So the whole day was devoted to this. There was we do have some allies up there in Albany, you know, who work in the houses of power, and they were good, and everybody was excellent. There were some people who had just gotten out of prison, several men who testified. One man had just gotten out in August, and they were saying, you know, here's docs telling you that everybody had masks and we had hand sanitizer, and it's totally not true. And so, you know, their testimony is there, and it's on the record. I will assume that that video is still up somewhere. I'm going to look for it on, you know, up there in the assembly up in Albany and see if we can find that video, because even though it's long, you know, people can, you know, skim through and see. Because very excellent testimony by especially the most recently released people, and also by family members whose loved ones, you know, didn't make it out the door, even though they were about to be released. But, you know, heaven forfend, we should let them go 2 weeks earlier so maybe they wouldn't get COVID. That's the brother who died out in Queensboro. You know, he had already made parole, and he ended up never making it out the door. And his sister spoke very movingly about that. So, you know, there is a lot of work going on around this issue because, you know, we're talking not only about our political prisoners, we're talking about mass incarceration, which, as we all know, came about as a result of all the activity and all the work that people were doing back in the 60s and 70s. They passed all these draconian laws and decided, we'll just lock everybody up and throw away the key. And that's what's been happening ever since. So, you know, you have a huge amount of mostly black and brown people who are sitting in prison for endless amounts of time and are constantly getting turned down at the board. So you have this elder population. I know people inside who are in their 70s and they're in their 80s. Who are getting hit by the board due to the nature of the crime.
Well, I'm going to jump in on this for the subject of this evening. Which candidates of any political party can we support? Well, if they don't support our issues, we don't support them.
Absolutely.
And this is one of the issues that we must get support on. This has to be a demand for our vote. And as Sister Betty asked you to repeat that, we will be going over and over that. But we're going to have a beginning list tonight of people who you can support, who have supported us. And, of course, we're in New York. We have Charles and Inez Barrett.
Yes.
That's the beginning. That's the top of our list.
And, of course, we have Howie Hawkins.
That's Howie Hawkins for governor. And he's been there for a long time.
I thought he was running for president, no?
No. He's running for president. My mistake.
And we have Melinda Parker Brown in Louisiana, New Orleans, Louisiana. So wherever you are, if your candidate supports political prisoners, please send this information to us at ralph.pointer@gmail.com. Sister Ann, you mentioned an organization called RAPP, R-A-P-P. Before you leave, just give us a quick explanation of who RAPP is.
Before we leave, okay. The candidates that you must support, Aretha Alikia Cannon from St. Petersburg, Florida. And so this is our beginning list of people who have proven to work and support us. And I'm so sorry, I did this twice. Last week I said Howie Hawkins for governor, and I was corrected then, and I'm corrected this time. Howie Hawkins for president.
Well, we have Paul and we have Paul on the line tonight, and Paul is with the Green Party, and he'll set us straight. Sorry to cut across you, Brother Ralph. And what about RAPP?
All right, people should go to rappcampaign.com. That's rappcampaign.com, all lowercase. And they have a lot of excellent information up here about all the work they're doing. And they've been involved in, you know, real things outside. They did a press conference from 9 to 10 that people could watch, you know, virtually. But a lot of them were actually about to testify later on. And then they segued into the hearings, which started at around 10, and were still going on at 5 when I had to stop listening because my job got too complicated.
Okay, your great work with
but
Jerry Cole,
great work,
and we're going to move on with that, Sister Betty.
All right, we got the wonderful journalist, Sister Dolores Cox, in the house again with us tonight. It is amazing the report she gave us on the unions and the history of the unions. And those of you who are in the movement, you should know that several leftist groups are launching a labor party as a third-party alternative to the two rich people elite parties. Sister Dolores, the mic is open. Comrade Ann Lamb, as always, we are in your debt. Thank you. Sister Dolores.
Sister Dolores, your mic is open.
We can't hear you. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go to, since we were talking about the Green Party, we're going to go to Brother Paul Gilman and have him update us on whatever he chooses to speak to this evening, and we will come back to Sister Dolores.
Hello.
How are you
Brother
doing?
Ralph, Sister Betty, can
right
you hear
on.
Me? Okay,
yes,
this is a great show because, of course, I want to talk about Howie Hawkins, the candidate. And, of course, that's who we should be voting for president. Joe Biden gives us nothing. And I would like to tie this to, of course, my specialty, the marijuana movement. And I want to show you, you talk about capitalism, and I want to talk about how it manipulates people. Because, and I'm going to quote from an article from NORML, National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Law, September 10, 2020. Survey, over 3 in 4 cannabis consumers prefer flower over concentrates, right? So in other words, they're trying to do all of these chemical processes to concentrate marijuana and present that as scientific and consumer friendly, when the reality is the majority of cannabis consumers prefer natural flowers and probably something they or someone they know grew themselves. And the Green Party is a strong advocate for homegrown. No taxation for homegrown, okay? Now, this is from, the article is based on the University of Arizona study, the Journal of Drug and Alcohol Dependence. 574 respondents, 78% prefer flower and moderate dosage, you know, moderate highs over the concentrates that the commercial industry wants to put on us. Now, remember, they're always talking about how black market pot is manipulated and higher concentrates than ever, which is always a load of crap, you know. But now, on the one hand, they badmouth it. On the other hand, when it suits their capitalist interests, they're all for it. And that's right, making it in a way so that you have to go to them to buy. You can't your local person in the neighborhood who grew it themselves, the local farmer, no homegrown, monopoly by rich white companies. I mean, it's disgusting, and that's why one of the numerous reasons I'm going for Howie Hawkins and all the Green Party candidates, because that is amongst, besides the Green New Deal, besides, you know, anti-imperialism, that is one issue that really explores the underside of the capitalist propaganda machine. So,
well, I would like
for Howie Hawkins
to review, listen to what he has to say. Listen to the Green Party platform. It covers a lot of territory, and it's a territory. If voting is your thing, these are the people you must vote for, because if you don't vote for your demand, you're practicing political slavery. Never mind
right.
this fear game that they put on you. They put on all of us, time in and time out. Thanks again, Paul. Would you like to close out?
Yeah, I'd like to close it out. And remember, Biden hates pot. He's for the drug courts, which are a bunch of bullshit. Excuse my French. I'm sorry. Bull, you know, whatever. And
yes.
Kamala Harris was is a prosecutor that's flip-flopped on the issues numerous times. And you know that once she gets in there, the 10-year president, they're saying, that she will just be a tool of U.S. imperialism. And, you know, and she will help monopolize cannabis in corporate powers to serve her corporate masters. And they will claim that scientific and medically efficacious, and it's all a lie. Thank you, Ralph. Thank you, Sister.
Okay, thank
Betty.
You for that report.
Thank you, Sister Betty.
See you next week, Sister Betty. All
right, before we open up the mic for Joel and Tom, who are hanging in the wings, and Brother Henry Higgins, the Mia Coalition, we're going to try Sister Dolores again. Sister Dolores, your mic is open. I hope we settled the technical difficulties, and we apologize.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Oh, okay, cool. This might be a little off topic, but last week I was reading online a blog, and the headline was "Decriminalize Jaywalking Now to Eliminate NYPD Racial Bias." And it goes on to say that jaywalking is not a crime. And it mentions that there's this Queen City Council member who's proposing that there be a bill, he's proposing a bill to decriminalize what is now considered illegal crossing, which is jaywalking, so that the NYPD will stop its arbitrary enforcement overwhelmingly against Black and Latino New Yorkers. And he resubmitted the bill last week on the 16th to decriminalize the jaywalking and eliminate the racial disparity. And he introduced this bill in 2014, you know, to shift the summons from the courts to the city's Office of Administrative Trials and Hearing, but the bill went nowhere. Okay, so now he's resubmitted it again. And he you know, he's saying, like, every New Yorker crosses the middle of the block, you know, and in the middle of the block. And you can't end up with a ticket unless you're a person of color, you know. And he goes on to say that upwards of 90% of jaywalking tickets issued by the NYPD are handed out to Blacks and Latinos. And interestingly enough, it's not a state law. It's just in the five boroughs. And he goes on to say that, you know, it's time that the system starts changing because the rules are outdated. So now his legislation is going to allow pedestrians to cross at any place along the street where there's no oncoming traffic. And so hopefully this bill will, you know, get passed this year. And, you know, when the NYPD was contacted, they claimed there was no racial bias in jaywalking, issuing jaywalking tickets. But the reports show that all but one person out of 80 jaywalking tickets that were issued so far this year, only one did not go to Blacks or Latinos. And so hopefully, you know, the bill goes somewhere now, which it didn't in 2014. And
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and then there was also on this blog back in January of this year, around the same issue, and the title of it was NYPD Targets Black and Latinos for Jaywalking Tickets, and as another way of harassing people of color. So last year, 89% of the tickets were issued to Blacks and Latinos for jaywalking, and more than half of them were issued to people under 25 years of age.
Oh.
So, yeah, and so far this year, majority of the tickets have also been issued to blacks and Latinos, and mostly in the Bronx. The thing about these tickets is that people have to go to court to pay these tickets. They have to take time off from work, and if they're undocumented immigrants, they also risk facing additional charges. And the fine is $250, okay?
Oh.
So, yes, so, you know, a few years ago, real quickly, I was in Harlem and I was walking down Madison Avenue and approaching 125th Street. So there was this young black man, and he was crossing the street, 125th Street, and he had, you know, he had a three-piece suit on and a tie and an attaché case, and this was around 6 o'clock in the evening or so. And he just looked like he was coming home from work. And there was a police car with two white cops sitting in it on the corner of 125th and Madison. And they summoned this young man over to the car. And I watched them talk to him. And next thing I know, I saw them giving him a ticket. So so I asked the young man, I said, "What is this ticket for?" He said, "For jaywalking." I said, "For jaywalking? Every freaking person in this city jaywalks." So I went over to the cop car, and I said to the cop that had just given him the ticket, and I said, "You just gave him a ticket for jaywalking?" I said, "Oh, so now that stop and frisk is all in the headlines now and being publicized, you're finding another way to start attacking black men. Jaywalking?" So then I took out my cell phone, and I started dialing. I said, "I'm going to call this into the radio station." And I pretended I was calling WBAI and in front of the cop, and I was dialing. And the cop looked at me, and I said, "Oh, yeah." I said, "You ain't getting away with this." I said, "I'm reporting this right now." Okay. And then I saw that the young man was walking away, so I caught up with him. And, you know, and I wanted to talk to him, you know, but he looked so dejected and so sad and so confused and so upset, you know, that he just said to me, I can't talk now, I can't talk now," you know. And I've never been able to forget that look on his face, you know, this young man, and the devastation that he was feeling at that time. And so now I'm reading this blog this month, last week, and find out that they're still doing it, these cops. You know, it's another way of them, you know, again, harassing young black and Latino young men, you know, and now it's due jaywalking tickets. So we just have to keep an eye out for that. Okay, that's what I wanted to say, you know.
Thank you so much for that, Dolores. That's another element of the so-called black tax that we have paying years. In every arena, we have the black tax. When they say you have to wear a mask, it's the black tax. This is the attack on people of color. The laws are applied in a destructive, racist manner. And again, the politicians that do not support us on these issues, you cannot support them at the ballot box. And let us get away from fear. Sister Betty.
I just want to thank Sister Dolores, and I want to remind people what an incredible resource she is for us. Without further ado, we want to go straight to Henry Hickens, and Brother Joel, your mic is open next, and Sister Vivian is back with us again. Brother Henry Hickens, your mic is open. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Back.
Good evening, everyone. I want to mentioned that recently the Pentagon, or rather I should say Trump, signed off on a $770 billion war budget for the military. And this is at the time when I can recall in the 70s, people were outraged at $115 billion war budget. And so we can see from the mid-1970s, from $115 billion, they've escalated the funding of the Pentagon to $770 billion. And it brings to mind something that Smedley Butler, General Smedley Butler, said years ago. And I like to read that quote to the audience. I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service, and during that period, I spent most of my time as a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer for capitalism. I helped make Mexico and especially Tampico safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of a half dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua for the International Banking House of Brown Brothers in 1902 through 1922. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for the American sugar interests in 1916. I helped make Honduras right for the American fruit companies in 1903. In China in 1927, I helped see to it that Standard Oil went on its way unmolested. Looking back on it, I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was to operate his racket in three districts. I operated on three continents.
Oh. Wow.
And he goes on to say, war is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars and the losses in lives. And
well, thank you for that. It's a reminder of what we are here in this America today, and it's getting worse by the hour. And remember, this is not just Trump. This is all of the presidents. And remember, the Democrats as a group voted on every budget and complained about it later. Thank you so much for that, Henry Higgins.
I do hope you will come back, and in three programs from now, repeat this broadcast item that you read on the air for us. You must remind people again and again what capitalism means. And since we're on a roll, we've got Brother Joel and Sister Vivian waiting. Brother Joel, your mic is open.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes,
we hear you, Joel.
Okay, well,
we hear you.
This week saw the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was one of the more liberal judges of the Supreme Court, and how it's created a vacancy which, if filled by a so-called conservative or reactionary or racist or what do we want to call them? Of course, the other end of the book, liberal, is not really that different. But on some of these Supreme Court decisions, it's gone quite a different way, like abortion rights and so on. There's a gigantic polarization within the factions of the system. Now, we have to bear in mind, we say, well, look who Trump is appointing. He's going to appoint some far-right reactionary racist to the Supreme Court, and that will change the legal structure of the country to a large degree and for a long time if he appoints someone that's not of very advanced age. But we have to remember also that we can't really see Mr. Biden as appointing somebody very different. In fact, we have to recall that he was instrumental, probably the most instrumental Democrat, in securing the ascendancy of Clarence Thomas, who has been one of the most conservative, reactionary judges that the court has ever seen relative to the political time and circumstances. So once again, we're confronted with how can there be any fundamental change as long as we have a capitalistic system bases everything on two things. One is profiteering and increasingly monopolized by huge corporations and banks that fund both sides of the campaigns, number one. And number two, the strategy of divide and conquer along various lines, especially racial lines, reinforced by perpetual unequal treatment, let's say, between unequal treatment, discrimination, and outright brutality, pretty much only in one direction, in terms of the establishment. And it seems that none of the presidential candidates really goes along with that. Some think that Biden is a little bit softer than Trump, or at least he's not revving up the stormtroopers in the street alongside the police as Trump is. But we know that fundamentally very little would change. There might be some slight changes within. It's like some difference between hard slavery and soft slavery. And the capitalist system really is an economic slavery system where many, many people work to make many people that don't work very rich and to accumulate enormous wealth on the backs of others. But they like to keep us divided and conquered along racial lines, sexual lines, sexual orientation lines, and so on. Whatever excuse there could be, they like us fighting each other instead of fighting those who are robbing and raping us all. And that's the really top. That's what has to be focused on. Now, there have to be a few voices that take exception to that. A few people who, when Biden inevitably betrays the masses, if he becomes president, starts new wars and new levels of degradation, enforces an increasingly fascistic rule by the police, and sides with the police even in the worst instances of their brutality, laying on top of the everyday terrorism that keeps us all on gunpoint, terrorism by the police that keeps us obeying the basic precepts of the capitalist class and thinking that there's no alternative, even in the worst cases of brutality. On top of that, very little can be expected from the likes of Joe Biden, or for that matter, his running mate, who is being somehow extolled as another great hope. But she could be even worse, because she can't be as easily accused of being a racist, since she's black, but we know her record also in defending capital punishment, keeping people in prison beyond their sentences so that they could be used as slave labor because, hey, the budget wasn't doing very well and you can't tax the rich, so why not enforce direct slavery in the prisons, even keeping people in there beyond their sentence? This is what we have as the alternative. Somebody's got to point that out. And
we're going to cut you off and ask you to come back next week and continue that, because we have Vivian Morgan on the line, 7690, a potential political activist running for office in New York. on our side.
But Brother Terry, we want you to start us off next week, because this is exactly what we're talking about. We can't let fear send us to the concentration camp. Thank you, Joel.
Vivia, your mic is open.
Yes, good evening, everyone. And I want to thank you, Betty and Ralph, for having me on tonight. I just want to say that due to the coronavirus, thousands of Brooklynites have faced an economic turmoil. And we just wanted to be able to give a helping hand by distributing food yesterday. We gave out over 200 boxes. And then hopefully we're going to try to make it more often as we can. So we will keep you posted on the dates and time that we're planning to do this. Again, my name is Vivian Morgan. Yes.
And she's going to be running for office. Remember that name, Vivian Morgan. She's going to need help, and we will help her because she has been helping us. Thanks again, everybody, for participating this evening. Hope to see you all next week. Much love. Good night.
I want to say we're going to be having a tribunal soon. In the spirit of Nelson Mandela, we'll be having a tribunal, and it is very important that you tune to this program to hear more about that. Sister Ann Lamb will perhaps give us a real update and a status on that event. Sister Ann?
Yes?
Yes, Sister Betty.
The tribunal
will be held in November of 2021. We've been doing a lot of work on it. I will definitely send out the Zoom link for the next meeting, the next general meeting, and hope that people will attend. Okay? Yes, we've been working hard on this since 2017. So
we'll
change your name to In the Spirit of Mandela, because we want to include Winnie as well.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
And with that,
November 2021.
Good night.
Go.
And thank you.
Thank you. I love this song.